Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlighten Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. I am Fanny Crawford.
And I am Stosh Ziolkowski.
We're so glad you joined us today. We're your storytelling hosts, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. Our theme today is fathers and sons.
Oh, boy.
We have some stories for you.
Right. And thanks to Andy Offutt Irwin, who is obviously was a son and is a father to Liam, his son's name. And he allows us to use his beautiful song, Tarry Here, to open the show. And so here we are.
Here we are. And I just want to sync my clock to your clock, Sash.
I have that we have been on the air for 56 seconds.
All right. Perfect. I guess.
Yes. And I like the way you introduced us. I think it's the first time you said, we are your hosts.
Oh, we are.
I feel like I got a promotion.
You, Sash, you know, if you were not here, there would be no show. So.
Anyway, well.
Enough said.
Now I am blushing. I do have a question for you.
Yes.
Can you see me?
Yeah. Can you see
good.
Me?
Oh, of course. And I like being able to see you because when we do the show, that's the way we do it when we're in the same room.
And so when I make these faces.
Yeah. And I just, well, this is a, I just wonder if you see me because of the test, you know, of when I speak, I'm on the full screen, I guess.
I don't use the full screen because I have other things I need to look
at. Oh, I see. Okay. But you see me in a little box.
You're big enough.
In the little box.
You're about the size of a 3x5 card.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is so pretty big.
Yes. Especially for what I want. So I'm going to test your powers of observation.
Okay.
And then you can tell me whenever you discover what I think you should discover, you will go, oh, okay, and then tell me. All right.
Did you get your beard trimmed?
Oh, God, no. Don't you see? I'm.
It's pretty long.
If it was December, let me tell you, all I have to do is get out my red outfit, though I don't do that anymore. No, my beard, in fact, I got a number of wonderful comments about my beard. On Saturday, Terry and I sat out on the front porch, you know, and talked to, there was a lovely couple from Hagerstown, and he had two young boys and a dog. And so they were standing next to their Jeep parked in front of the house. And we talked to them for about 15 minutes while they ate their ice cream, maybe even longer. And the woman complimented me a couple of times on my beard. And I said, well, your husband has a great beard, too. And she says, no, he doesn't. And she was moaning and grinning. So I spoke up for the husband's beard. He's a young state trooper, and he apparently does all kinds of stuff. And he works in plain clothes a lot. So and he had a really nice beard, dark beard, you know. I mean, and she said, oh, I'll be so glad when he shaves it off. And she said, I don't know. How long have you had that? I said, I've had this beard before any of you were born. And when I said it started in 1969, I said she was going to fall over.
So I'm studying you now on video now that you've mentioned that I should be paying attention. And you're wearing an unusual T-shirt, but I can't see anything except, you're wearing your National Storytelling Festival shirt.
Yes, but that's not the...
That's not... the thing. Okay.
No. This is like a police question. So, what did this guy who, what did this guy who showed up on your screen look like? Come on, lady, we need a description because you know.
He's wearing glasses.
Right? Mm-hmm. Okay, it's not that important. No, they're same glasses. Everything is the same.
Different headset?
Except, no, one different. There is one major difference. Outstandingly major difference. It's okay. It doesn't matter.
I can't see your ears, so I don't know if they're pierced.
Oh, my God, no. I wouldn't wear pierced ears. No, I always wanted to get a gold ring like the sailors had. So, they wore gold rings in their ear. You know why they did?
Yeah. Why?
They did that so that if they died in a foreign land, the people who would bury them would take care of their body, would have a payment in gold.
That's very sweet.
That's why the hoop rings were there.
Okay.
How about that? Mm-hmm. No, my ears are the same.
There's
it's
no
okay. It's okay. So we
are
should
you
going to
tell me eventually?
I tell you what, I'll show you. Are you ready?
Oh.
Run.
Oh, I wondered if that's what it was, but I couldn't see anything remarkably different. So.
No.
Sash anyway. Has no hair.
Right.
Has less hair.
I got tired of the hair on my head looking so scraggly and sticking out and weird. And so I used one of those magic little machines that we had.
You gave Terry yourself a haircut.
And Terry finished it with the, you know, with the buzzer like thing.
Okay, so that's the first point of our weekly update is that Stash has no hair on his head.
Right.
The second point is that you are prepping for your July 8th. Is that the right date?
Yes, July 8th, 7 o'clock.
Second library performance.
Right.
Zoom to ostensibly or possibly to all of the libraries in Washington County at some point.
Yes.
And your theme is Beauty and the Beast.
The Ugly Duckling.
Ugly Duckling, okay.
So I'll be telling that. I'll be telling that story in song, The Ugly Duckling.
With the accordion.
With my accordion, which I
dusted off. Oh, I can't wait.
And I was so pleased that I could. My fingers are still working. Although I do have one that's going to need medical attention. Because can you notice that finger?
Yeah.
It locks every once in a while. I've had surgeries on both hands for trigger fingers.
Yep.
When I was in Arkansas and in Pittsburgh. And I must say it was interesting. And I thought I might be finished with trigger fingers. I never had any until 2009. Or maybe even 8, and then I had surgery. I had surgery on my hands 3 times in Arkansas, and then in Pittsburgh, about 5 years later, it happened again, and I had had surgery. Once it gets stuck good and proper, I'll go to the doctors and get a recommendation from the doctor because there's nothing they can do about it beforehand.
But you are still playing accordion. You're not giving up accordion regardless of how many fingers you have.
Even if that finger doesn't work, I can substitute a different finger.
You have several.
I know, you know what? That's true.
Okay.
Here we go. So we're talking about fathers and sons.
Yes.
Right? Well, here's what my contribution today might be weird, but I thought it would be interesting to find out about Father's Day.
The history of?
Yeah.
So you can start with that.
So how about if I do a little bit of the history of Father's Day?
Sure.
Okay. So I did some research. It's my new favorite thing to say. I did some research. And the generally accepted history of Father's Day traces its beginnings to the adoration of a woman for her father, who raised six young children after his wife's death. So, William Jackson Smart was a Civil War veteran. His daughter, Sonora Louise Smart Dodd, I love it when people have four names, got the idea of a day to honor fathers after hearing a Mother's Day sermon. She approached the ministers and civic groups in Spokane, Washington, and gave them her idea. Celebration was supposed to take place on the first Sunday in June 1910, which was her father's birthday. But the ministers asked for more time to plan their sermons, and the third Sunday in June was the next best date. But as with every holiday, there are controversies and other claims. So Harry O. Meek, and that O is just a, it's not, his name isn't O. Meek, it's O is his middle initial, which I think is kind of interesting. Anyway, he said he started Father's Day observances in 1915, and he founded the day because he felt that fathers were just as important as mothers, and they already had their own day. He was president of the Lions Club in Chicago, and he is said to have celebrated the first Father's Day with his organization to stress the need to honor fathers, and he selected the third Sunday in June for the celebration. So, in appreciation of Meek's work, the Lions Club of America presented him with the gold watch with the inscription reading, "Originator of Father's Day, on his birthday, June 20th, 1920. Now, in 1924, Calvin Coolidge wrote to the nation's governors suggesting they observe the holiday in their states. And he said, "The widespread observance of this occasion is calculated to establish more intimate relations between fathers and their children, and also to impress upon fathers the full measure of their obligations." Wow. I thought it was just a day for people to line up out near my house and get in line to go get ice cream. So Coolidge and his wife had two sons, John Coolidge and Calvin Jr., who died from sepsis, which is terrible, at 16. Anyway, two early attempts to formalize the day were introduced into the House of Representatives, but neither resolution passed. The most notable effort to have Father's Day officially recognized was made by United States Senator Margaret Chase Smith, who is a Republican of Maine, and her 1965 proposal to Congress read in part, "Either we honor both our parents, mother and father, or let us desist from honoring either one. But to single out just one of our two parents and omit the other is the most grievous insult imaginable." And I have a little thought there. When I read that, I thought, boy, she's really trying to get back at her mother for something. And so anyway, Father's Day was already being celebrated in lots of the states. Congress didn't act on that suggestion. But in 1972, one of our famous presidents, President Richard Nixon, signed a congressional resolution establishing Father's Day as a national holiday, and it's to be celebrated on the third Sunday in June. So it has become a national holiday in this country and has come to be observed in South America, the United Kingdom, and Europe. According to recent figures from the Census Bureau, of the 121 million adult males in America, about 75 million are fathers to biological, step, or adopted children, and about 1 in 4 men are grandfathers. So, being a grandfather, I always thought I was in a really, really super special group, but it turns out that there are like 20 million of us. Anyway, I thought it would be interesting for people listening to know, you know, some history, because I didn't know the history of that. I do think I read some of the stuff where about fathers are left out of everything, mothers get all the attention, and fathers are just expected to go out and work and bring in money and all that. And I don't know why anybody would say that, but
that's a good one.
Yeah.
It's good to know our history, our positive history.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes, especially in these days when some history is being brought to light, things being brought to light. Shall I mention Tulsa?
You could.
Yeah. I did not know. And did you know? I know because of your background, you must have known all about Tulsa and the terrible killings there. And I never knew any of it. I had a number of things. A dear niece of mine wrote to the family, to whoever I guess would listen to the family, and said she was so disgusted over and over and over again when she found out things like about this horrible massacre in Tulsa, and no one ever told her about it before, and she's educated, she has a master's degree, it wasn't a rant, but I could see her standing up with thousands of people behind her as she spoke about the things that we were not taught in school. And you know, I did write to her and said, thanks for saying that, because as old as I am, I never heard any of it either.
Yeah.
There are so many things I don't know about history because they didn't put it in her history books. So
true.
Yeah. So, can I make one other announcement? So, and
yeah,
then we get started on, because I know we have a guest today. July 14th, Tom Lee, storyteller from Connecticut, and he tells traditional stories and has been in Scotland and places all over the world. He is an artist with a Arts for Learning in Connecticut, and this is going to be his first time in this part of the country. And also, our storytelling listeners should be apprised that they should go to speakstoryseries.com, and that way they can register for the July 14th Speak Story virtual concert by Tom Lee. And they, once they register, then they'll be sent a link. And the other major news is, which I don't think we discussed last week, we did personally, but Jonesboro will be in virtual storytelling festival. And it will not be, for the first time in its history, for the first time in 48 years, there will not be tents up in Jonesboro and thousands of people being regaled by storytellers from all over the country. And that's kind of sad.
It will make the 50th even that more wonderful.
Well, we'll have to wait 2 years for the 50th.
Yep, but it might take 2 years at this point.
Well, they've set a date for the festival in 2021, and I've requested that my tickets from this year be transferred ahead. So that's good. So that means, you know, for my next year's budget for storytelling events, I've already paid for one of the major ones.
See, there is a silver lining.
Oh, you bet. Anyway, I won't be attending the virtual storytelling festival. So,
I've not made up my mind firmly, but there's a lot going on just keeping up with what's in my head right this minute. Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, the nation and maybe the world is being flooded by storytelling events.
Yep.
And I hope the people who are doing this will understand that too much of the good thing is sometimes too much. You know, well, because I know they're doing it because they are making a living and that. And, I think that it's one of those things you have to be careful of. You give people the opportunity not to get in their car and go someplace and, you know, not to have to go downtown on a certain day and stuff like that. And they might decide, yeah, I'd rather do this. I'll sit in my comfort of my home. So.
Well, there's not more storytelling than there was before. We just couldn't see it all because you had to be there.
Well, okay. I won't argue with you.
Oh, please argue with me.
Well, I do think there is more. There are so many people that I've never heard of sending out invitations to storytelling events.
Well,
and they're virtual.
That's part of my point is that I'm shocked by how many storytellers there are in the world, but it's become partly because it's become more regional. So I only know the people that come through the same venues that I know.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that there's not things going on all over the world where I never have any connection at all, virtual or otherwise.
And I agree. You're right. That's a good point. I just meant that some of them who are appearing maybe in schools and libraries and festivals, some of the lesser known storytellers have jumped on the bandwagon of, oh, I can get this Zoom app and I can do this. And I can also get paid to do this if I set it up the right way. And my concern is it's like, anybody else, you know, people who started podcasts, you know, there are so many podcasts and people have jumped on that bandwagon and you can find a podcast and listen to someone speak either eloquently or not so eloquently on any topic now, you know, and so it's the airwaves are flooded with it.
Like
us. I think it's my curmudgeon coming out because I liked it when television had
three stations,
three or four. You know, we had three in Baltimore. We had three major stations, and then we had the public television station, which was different because it was on. It wasn't 2, 11, and 13 were the three major numbers, and then channel 45 was introduced in Baltimore, and it was a different kind of television. You know, it didn't have advertising and stuff like that on it. So, and now there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of stations. There's so many. Anyway, I think we should introduce our guest.
Okay. Shall I go see if I can find him?
Yes. And please don't spend 2 hours.
It's a deal.
Okay. Make sure he's comfortable and has a nice place to sit so we can hear him. Okay. Today's guest on the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour is T.H. Barnes, who is a relative of Fanny's. And he is going to tell us some things that we will definitely consider history. Welcome, Mr. Barnes. Good morning, Mr. Barnes. How are you today?
Good morning, Mr. Z. It's good to see you again.
It's good to see you.
It's been some time.
It has. And so I would like to ask a few questions today. Actually, what I have in mind is to ask you a question or two and then have you tell us anything you want about that question because you have so much expertise in so many areas and so much in the way of knowledge of life. So one of the things I would like to ask you is if you remember having a Father's Day celebration ever in your life earlier on.
So I am to understand that you just asked me a question about Father's Day, which of course was just yesterday. I am to answer whatever question I want to answer, regardless of the question that you actually posed to me.
I think that's the way it works, because I have heard you speak before.
You think that I ramble a bit.
I think you are a wealth of information about human life and experience in our country.
Words.
And in different places.
Words. I do have a wealth of words. I would agree with you on that one. Well, Father's Day, you know, was not such a big deal and not such a fuss made over these holidays when I was coming up, when I was a younger father. Now, of course, I am a father. I have three children, and I'm happy to have raised to adulthood. We did lose one of them recently, which was a blow. It was a surprise to me to survive one of my adult sons. I guess my first thought when you ask me about Father's Day celebrations is that I need to get in here at the very start and make it clear that parenting, I've heard one or two people use that word like a verb, you know, parenting, that sounds odd to me. But parenthood is a joint effort. There's rarely been a parent who managed to single-handedly raise successful adults without somebody else stepping in as a partner, whether your community or your church or one's own wife or brother, neighbors. And I do want to honor my partnership with Mrs. Barnes, make it clear that I did not raise these children on my own. And of course, we've celebrated Mother's Day over the years as well. I don't remember a discussion of a particular Father's Day until my children were well grown into adulthood. So I guess it would be more recently that I even had a Father's Day celebration, any experience with that. But my children do honor Father's Day. I get a card occasionally, and sometimes they'll bring me a book that's often a gift. And of course, my grandchildren and my great grands, who live in a completely different world than I do, even though they live just down the street, you know, they often bring me things for Father's Day. Occasional old bottle of brandy, for instance, and sometimes books of poetry. I've received several Paul Laurence Dunbar poetry books on Father's Day from the younger generation. So there's no particular year or day that stands out for me, but we do celebrate, or my family does celebrate, that holiday. And of course, my sons are both fathers themselves, and that has been an interesting education for me, watching my sons as fathers, trying to sit on my hands and shut my mouth and let them do their jobs without interfering. So that's an interest. I did not expect that question from you, Mr. Z. I am surprised to hear it, but happy to answer. And I hope that was a satisfactory response.
That was a wonderful response. And I have to say, I'm sure you echoed so many fathers and certainly mothers who have experienced that sensation of having to, as you said, sit on your hands and kind of be quiet as you watch your your children make all the mistakes that you think you could correct, because I have experienced that.
The wonder of it is that very often I'm expecting some action or decision to turn out be a mistake, only to find out that it's a good thing I did not disclose my own ignorance, because it worked out just fine after all.
Right. That's a good life lesson there. Sometimes if we just stay out of the problem, we won't cause more.
I see. I can tell you have some experience with parenthood yourself.
Yes, I do. And I have found that there are times when I should not give anybody advice, especially my children. And I have been wrong in what I thought was the best thing to do.
Yes. Being a parent, that's almost a daily occurrence once you get over yourself, you know, and are willing to listen.
And even when I felt like I was 100% right, and it turned out that I was, it was best that I didn't open my big mouth and let them learn their own.
Those are the hard lessons that we learn over time. Right. Yes.
So, I do have another question about politics. Because the political turmoil seems to be, especially around presidential politics, as in my case, as I've gotten older, I think that I have some fond memories of different administrations. And then when I stop and reflect on it, I think, I didn't like that, or I didn't like what that president did or this president did. And I wonder if you have any outstanding remembrances of political campaigns or administrations in your experience that really made an impact either on your life personally or on the lives of the people around you and your community.
Yes, of course I do. I wondered if you might ask me about politics, because in this year, 1942, of course, we are in the midst of what they seem to be calling a world war. I try not to talk politics or contemporary politics, because the stakes are so high at this point in time. But if you're asking me about domestic politics and what I remember of elections and presidential campaigns, well, of course, I have quite a bit to say about that. The earliest election that I remember was 1856, I believe, was the year when Millard Fillmore and James Buchanan were the primary candidates, and I was a very young child at that point, but my mother was very interested in politics. And I remember a parade coming by our house and brass band, flags flying. Now, I did not know anything about Millard Fillmore or James Buchanan at the time, but I did love a parade. And my experience then was two consecutive parades just a few days apart. The first from the Republicans, there was the newly formed Republican Party at that time. And Millard Fillmore had been vice president and was put forward as the candidate for president in that election. And the marchers, the parade, as they came by our house, we were sitting on the fence, and Mother said, "Throw your cap in the air and make joyful noise." So I did. And these men, as they marched by with flags flying and the brass band playing, they began tossing these big copper cents to us, Brother Peter and myself, as we sat on the fence outside our house. And that was quite exciting to me. I had a pocket full of money, most money I'd ever had in my life up until then, even though I shared with Peter. And the next 2 days later, something like that, James Buchanan's supporters came marching down the road, and Mother grabbed us by the collars and dragged us into the house, barred the shutters, locked the doors, drew the curtains, and all our colored neighbors did the same, because these men were in support of the Southern sympathizers and beginning to talk about secession of the Southern states at that time. And they were not in favor of education or any sort of progress for colored folk. And those men threw stones, huge rocks, at our locked and barred windows and doors. I was hiding under a bed for a time with Brother Peter, but I had to come out and look when the rocks began to hit the house. So that was a very strong memory. And I suppose the next most exciting story I have about elections was when I was 21 years old. That would have been the election of 1870. Now, this was during President Grant's first term, General Ulysses S. Grant, the hero of the Union, second only to old Abe Lincoln in bringing about the emancipation of the colored race. 1870 was the first national election since the 15th Amendment that gave us colored men citizenship and the vote. Now, I don't remember the election outcome being much in doubt at that point, as the Confederates were mostly banned from the polls in their home states in the South. And Grant, at that point, still retained much of his legendary heroic status among whites who had participated in the Union Army and never families, not to mention having the colored vote. Reconstruction was still in place, and the black codes that soon dismantled all that were just beginning to take hold. Though there were efforts, certainly, to keep colored people from the polls, those were well underway, and not just in the South. Nonetheless, the Republicans came through the election with their majority pretty much intact in both houses of Congress. And I was voting in Pennsylvania, in the oil country near Tityute, Warren County, north central Pennsylvania. So I was very excited to be part of that election and considered it my sacred duty to vote since I was able to at that time. There have been many elections since then, and I've done my part in campaigning a bit, but those are the two standouts for me.
Wow. Well, so many people don't have a good sense of the history of the colored people and of the things that they had to go through to vote. And I have found also that there are some people who did not know, and maybe some who still don't know, that women were not allowed to vote until, I am not so good on history dates, but I think it was 1920. 1920. Yes. When confronted with that fact, some people think that I should go and just read the Sunday paper because they don't believe it. It's amazing. I'm sure you've experienced this. The older I get, the more shocked I am at the ignorance of many of our youth. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that they truly just that they don't know some things.
Well, and that is likely the fault of our education system, I would say. But you do have to make allowances for people, especially across generations. If I allow myself to be shocked, I would be daily stunned by what my children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren do not know. Why, on my way here today to speak to you, I'm staying with one of my grands here.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the questions she asks me are just astonishing to me. You know, that the critical dates in my mind that I would think every American would know, she is barely aware that something happened at that time.
I
to be patient.
Right. I wonder, could you give us an example of that?
Oh.
Not that I want you to pick on your granddaughter.
Yeah.
but
well, that election that I was just telling you about, she was asking me just today about the first time that I voted. And for some reason, she seemed to think that it was a decade or so after the Civil War that I would have had the opportunity to vote. She knew that Ulysses S. Grant, General Grant, became the president, but she did not know that I had been able to vote for him. I guess she got confused about how many terms of office he had, or I don't know, and confused about Reconstruction. So she thought that I might have had trouble voting at that time. But to me, that was such a memorable event, that first election, that I would have thought that anybody interested in our history, in the history of Black people in the United States, would know that date as an important one. And she appeared completely ignorant of the fact. So I just had to swallow my astonishment and continue the conversation.
Well, I have a question about voting. In your lifetime, I know from past hearing you speak and a few other times that you have seen an awful lot. In your lifetime, were you ever prevented from voting? You yourself or your friends or neighbors?
I was not prevented from voting at any time. There was an election or two that I missed either from illness or some other. I think there were only one or two, and those were not presidential elections. But there were times when different elements attempted to dissuade me from voting by making it more difficult, by moving the polling place or changing the hours that we had to get to the polls. But in my community in Pennsylvania first, and then in New York State, where I lived most of my life, we often voted as a community. The whole family would go. And even though the women were not permitted to vote at that time, I'm speaking early on, that didn't mean they didn't accompany us to the polls, assuming that there was not going to be too much trouble in getting us into the building and casting our vote. We did not want to put people unnecessarily at risk, but it was such an important event that we often took our children with us, and the neighbors of the whole streets would walk to the polls together because it was a community event. And it would have been difficult for people to stop us, save by tricks that planned in advance, such as moving the polling place at the last minute or moving the polling, eliminating polling places so that people had to travel much further. You've heard of these things going on in some parts of the country even now.
Yes.
So,
Yes, I have. I've been made aware of that, that people have been closing the polls and changing the address of the polls without actually informing all the people.
Yes.
So that was
going on even in the time that I was becoming a political person, I guess. So there was safety in numbers. There was interest in supporting each other and casting our votes. So I would not say I was ever prevented, but it was at times difficult to make that happen. And of course, because I was a small businessman, I either had to close the shop or find someone to be their responsible party who probably also had responsibilities.
Wow. Well, this is truly a question that will show my ignorance, but in your experience, in your lifetime, were any of the polls ever run or managed by people of color?
No, not in my experience.
Well, okay, you know, I didn't know that for sure, but I guess that was true, and that is another instance of history that I would be willing to bet. If I went out on the street and asked 50 people, most of them would say, well, of course there were polls like that, you know, because people have been allowed to vote for so long and they don't realize how history was manipulated by certain groups.
Well, you may have heard me say that my affiliation with the Republican Party came about because of my mother's teachings, education, and I became a lifelong Republican because of her affiliation for the party of Lincoln, the party of emancipation, the party of rights for African Americans. And I know that the party has changed over time, but I have still voted Republican most of the time. There have been some exceptions for particular positions or offices that were in contention. But what I started to say was that with this two-party system that we follow most of the time in the United States, African Americans were not voting officials or part of the election board in a particular county or state doesn't mean that the party did not pay attention to votes from Black people, votes from colored people, because they understood that they needed those votes some of the time to put their people in office. And so we were often consulted or invited to speak on topics of interest to our neighbors. So I did not always feel excluded, but it was a different time. It was a different system. Just the fact that those people who were inviting me to express my opinion on politics referred to me as Tommy, as opposed to Mr. Barnes, you know, that would make a difference in how I would respond to being asked my opinion.
I'm surprised. I know your name from knowing your granddaughter. However, I don't think I've ever heard Tommy.
Oh yes. My parents called me, my father mostly called me Thomas. My mother called me Tommy most of the time. Right. And it was I was still Tommy to most of the people in my hometown of Olean, even up until a few years ago. You know, it was not until my picture began to appear in the local paper and it said Mr. T.H. Barnes that people even recognized that I had another name besides Tommy. He was the barbershop. So, you know, it depends on who you're speaking with and how they see you in the community.
Well, we have just a few minutes left in our program. So instead of asking you another question, I wonder if at this time there is something that you would like to say that you have on your mind and on any subject whatsoever. That's a broad invitation, isn't it?
It is indeed. Well, I just want to say that girl, that great granddaughter of mine, did tell me that your topic today would be fathers and sons. And so I did give some thought to what I wanted to say, if I had a message. And it, aside from what I mentioned earlier, is that no father ever raises his, and no mother ever raises a child entirely free of his influence and support. I did have a lot of that from a lot of different sources to help make my children the fine people that they have become. But I also wanted to mention that aside from my father, who left us, who died of what we called quick consumption, you would call it pneumonia, when I was just 7 years old. And I was not so much bereft at that time, being so young, as kind of put on notice that I needed to pay attention to the elders around me, because I never knew when I might lose one of them. And I did, in fact, lose my mother just a few years later. So because Brother Peter and I were orphaned at such a young age, there were always men who stepped forward, men and women, but we are talking about fathers here, men who became father figures to me over the years. And I will just name a few of them to honor their memories, their presence in my life. There was my Uncle Peter, my mother's brother, who became primary father figure along with his wife, my Aunt Caroline. There was Mary Bell, Mrs. Barnes's grandfather, who actually introduced us, Mr. John Lott, who became one of my best and staunchest advocates and friends. And I think at times despaired of Mary Bell and I becoming man and wife, but he was patient, and that did happen after 2 or 3 years into the friendship. And then, of course, Mr. Samuel T. Johnston, who was my master barber when I was training in my trade, who actually introduced me formally to Mr. Frederick Douglass. Now, I knew I had met Frederick Douglass as a when I was a child, because he came to the New York Colored Orphans Asylum where I resided for 6 or 7 years, but I never actually had a direct conversation with him. He never knew me as an individual until we were introduced by Samuel T. Johnston in Susquehanna, Pennsylvania. But after that, Frederick Douglass came to my house on one occasion, and I was able to introduce others of my circle to him. And in some ways, he is a father figure to me, because he, more than any other man that I ever met, dedicated his life to the uplift and improvement of our people. So I do want to mention those who helped raise me, in effect, once I lost my own father. And I hope those of you who are listening to this radio broadcast will thank not only your own fathers, but all those who had a hand in making you whatever you have become today.
Well, thank you very much. That is a wonderful list and reference, and I think that is a perfect place for us to end our interview, as we're just about running out of time to broadcast. So I want to thank you, Mr. T.H. Barnes, Tommy, if I may, for being here today, and thank you very much, and I hope that we'll have you back on the radio sometime, and I know you have lots of topics that you can give us some wisdom on. So thank you very much for being here.
And thank you, Mr. Zielkowski.
Wow.
Well, one good name deserves another.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to go find that girl and bring her back, because I have no doubt that she wants to have something. She wants to have the last word.
Sometimes she does. Well, I'm guessing Fanny will be here soon. Oh, there she is. Fanny, thank you so much for having me.
Hi, Stas.
Hi.
I was listening.
We had a lovely time. Room.
Yes, I could hear.
Good. I'm glad you did. Having T.H. Barnes was a great, very nice thrill to me, because I always enjoy hearing his voice and whatever he has to say. I've learned things from him over the few years that I've gotten to know him.
Me too, so. As he explained to you, to my chagrin.
I like to remark about having a few words to say.
Yes.
So what would you like to say at the end of our program? We're about done.
You just want me to close?
I think that would be a good idea.
Okay.
Thanks to everyone for being with us on this day. It's a beautiful day.
And a shout out to all the fathers amongst us the day after Father's Day. You've been listening to Fanny Crawford and
Stas Zielkowski,
your storytelling hosts for this storytelling hour at enlightenradio.org. You can listen to past podcasts. You can listen to past shows at our site, talltales.enlightenradio.org. And we're looking forward to seeing you, hearing you next Monday at 12 noon. We're broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. This is Independent Community Radio. And this Enlightened Radio show encourages all of our listeners to share and document and spread all of our stories.
Next up.
We're going to be doing poetry accompanied by music after.
All right. Yes. That was John Case, our station manager.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, Sandy.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I got to stop the recording here.